Chapter 11. The Emperor Gratian is slain by the treachery of the usurper Maximus. From fear of him, Justina ceases persecuting Ambrose. Nearly at the same time with the holding of these synods at Constantinople, the following events occurred in the western parts. Maximus, from the island of Britain, rebelled against the Roman Empire, and attacked Gratian, who was then wearied and exhausted in a war with the Alemanni. One in Italy, Valentinian being still a minor, Probus, a man of consular dignity, had the chief administration of affairs, and was at that time prefect of the Praetorium. Justina, the mother of the young prince, who entertained Arian sentiments, as long as her husband lived had been unable to molest the Homusians, but going to Milan while her son was still young, she manifested great hostility to Ambrose the bishop, and commanded that he should be banished. 3. While the people, from their excessive attachment to Ambrose, were offering resistance to those who were charged with taking him into exile, intelligence was brought that Gratian had been assassinated by the treachery of the usurper Maximus. In fact, Andragathius, a general under Maximus, having concealed himself in a litter resembling a couch, which was carried by mules, ordered his guards to spread a report before him that the litter contained the Emperor Gratian's wife. They met the emperor near the city of Lyon in France just as he had crossed the river, who, believing it to be his wife, and not suspecting any treachery, fell into the hands of his enemy as a blind man into the ditch. 4. Andragathius, suddenly springing forth from the litter, slew him. 3. Gratian thus perished in the consulate of Morogordes and Saturninus, 4. In the 24th year of his age, and the 15th of his reign. When this happened, the Empress Justina's indignation against Ambrose was repressed. Afterwards, Valentinian, most unwillingly, but constrained by the necessity of the time, admitted Maximus as his colleague in the empire. Probus, alarmed at the power of Maximus, resolved to retreat into the regions of the east, leaving Italy. Therefore, he proceeded to Iricum, and fixed his residence at Thessalonica, a city of Macedonia. Chapter 12. While the Emperor Theodosius is engaged in military preparations against Maximus, his son Honorius is born. He then proceeds to Milan in order to encounter the usurper, but the Emperor Theodosius was filled with great solicitude, and levied a powerful army against the usurper, fearing lest he should meditate the assassination of the young Valentinian also. While engaged in this preparation, an embassy arrived from the Persians, requesting peace from the emperor. Then also the Empress Flaxilla bore him a son named Honorius, on the 9th of September, in the consulate of Richomelius and Clitius. One under the same consulate, and a little previously, Agelius, bishop of the Novatians, died. In the year following, wherein Arcadius Augustus bore his first consulate in conjunction with Bordon, 8. Timothy, bishop of Alexandria, died, and was succeeded in the episcopate by Theophilus. About a year after this, Demophilus, the Arian prelate, having departed this life, the Arians sent for Marinus, a leader of their own heresy out of Thrace, to whom they entrusted the bishopric, but Marinus did not long occupy that position, for under him that sect was divided into two parties, as we shall hereafter explain. 4. For they invited Dotatheus, 5, to come to them from Antioch in Syria, and constituted him their bishop. Meanwhile, the Emperor Theodosius proceeded to the war against Maximus, leaving his son Arcadius with imperial authority at Constantinople. Accordingly, arriving at Thessalonica, he found Valentinian and those about him in great anxiety, because through compulsion they had acknowledged the usurper as emperor. Theodosius, however, gave no expression to his sentiments in public. He neither rejected nor admitted 6. The embassy of Maximus, but unable to endure tyrannical domination over the Roman Empire, under the assumption of an imperial name, he hastily mustered his forces and advanced to Milan, 7, whither the usurper had already gone. Chapter 13. The Arians excited tumult at Constantinople. At the time when the emperor was thus occupied on his military expedition, the Arians excited a great tumult at Constantinople by such devices as these. Men are fond of fabricating statements respecting matters about which they are in ignorance, and if at any time they are given occasion, they swell to a prodigious extent rumors concerning what they wish, being ever fond of change. This was strongly exemplified at Constantinople on the present occasion, for each invented news concerning the war which was carrying on at a distance, according to his own caprice, always presuming upon the most disastrous results, and before the contest had yet commenced, they spoke of transactions in reference to it, of which they knew nothing, with as much assurance as if they had been spectators on the very scene of action. Thus it was confidently affirmed that the usurper had defeated the emperor's army, even the number of men slain on both sides being specified, and that the emperor himself had nearly fallen into the usurper's hands. Then the Arians, who had been excessively exasperated by those being put in possession of the churches within the city who had previously been the objects of their persecution, began to augment these rumors by additions of their own. But since the currency of such stories with increasing exaggeration, in time made even the farmers themselves believe them, for those who had circulated them from hearsay, affirmed to the authors of these falsehoods, that the accounts they had received from them had been fully corroborated elsewhere, then indeed the Arians were emboldened to commit acts of violence, and among other outrages, to set fire to the house of Nectarius the bishop. This was done in the second consulate, one of Theodosius Augustus, which he bore with Syngius. Chapter 14, Overthrow and Death of the Usurper Maximus. As the emperor marched against the usurper, the intelligence of the formidable preparations made by him so alarmed the troops under Maximus, that instead of fighting for him, they delivered him bound to the emperor, who caused him to be put to death, on the 27th of August, under the same consulate. One Andragathius, who with his own hand had slain Gratian, understanding the fate of Maximus, precipitated himself into the adjacent river, and was drowned. Then the victorious emperors made their public entry into Rome, accompanied by Honorius the son of Theodosius, still a mere boy, whom his father had sent for from Constantinople immediately after Maximus had been vanquished. They continued therefore at Rome celebrating their triumphal festivals, during which time the emperor Theodosius exhibited a remarkable instance of clemency toward Symmachus, a man who had borne the consular office, and was at the head of the Senate at Rome. For this Symmachus was distinguished for his eloquence, and many of his orations are still extant composed in the Latin tongue, but inasmuch as he had written a panegyric on Maximus, and pronounced it before him publicly, he was afterwards impeached for high treason, wherefore to escape capital punishment he took sanctuary in a church. To the emperor's veneration for religion led him not only to honor the bishops of his own communion, but to treat with consideration those of the Novatians also, who embraced the Homoousian creed, to gratify therefore Leontius the bishop of the Novatian church at Rome, who interceded in behalf of Symmachus, he graciously pardoned him for that crime. Symmachus, after he had obtained his pardon, wrote an apologetic address to the emperor Theodosius. Thus the war, which at its commencement threatened so seriously, was brought to a speedy termination. Chapter 15, Of Flavian Bishop of Antioch. About the same period, the following events took place at Antioch in Syria. After the death of Paulinus, the people who had been under his superintendence refused to submit to the authority of Flavian, but caused Devagrius to be ordained bishop of their own party. As he did not survive his ordination long, no other was constituted in his place, Flavian having brought this about. Nevertheless, those who disliked Flavian on account of his having violated his oath, held their assemblies apart. To meanwhile Flavian left no stone unturned, as the phrase is, to bring these also under his control, and this he soon after effected, when he appeased the anger of Theophilus, then bishop of Alexandria, by whose mediation he conciliated Damasus bishop of Rome also. For both these had been greatly displeased with Flavian, as well for the perjury of which he had been guilty, as for the schism he had occasioned among the previously united people. Theophilus therefore being pacified, sent Isidore a presbyter to Rome, and thus reconciled Damasus, who was still offended, representing to him the propriety of overlooking Flavian's past misconduct, for the sake of producing concord among the people. Communion being in this way restored to Flavian, The people of Antioch were in the course of a little while induced to acquiesce in the union secured. Such was the conclusion of this affair at Antioch. But the Arians of that city, being ejected from the churches, were accustomed to hold their meetings in the suburbs. Meanwhile, Cyril, bishop of Jerusalem, having died about this time, 3 was succeeded by John. Chapter 16, Demolition of the idolatrous temples at Alexandria, and the consequent conflict between the pagans and Christians. At the solicitation of Theophilus, bishop of Alexandria, the emperor issued an order at this time for the demolition of the heathen temples in that city, commanding also that it should be put in execution under the direction of Theophilus. Seizing this opportunity, Theophilus exerted himself to the utmost to expose the pagan mysteries to contempt. And to begin with, he caused the Mithraeum 1 to be cleaned out, and exhibited to public view the tokens of its bloody mysteries. Then he destroyed the Serapim, and the bloody rites of the Mithraeum he publicly caricatured. The Serapim also he showed full of extravagant superstitions, and he had the Theopripus carried through the midst of the forum. The pagans of Alexandria, and especially the professors of philosophy, were unable to repress their rage at this exposure, and exceeded in revengeful ferocity their outrages on a former occasion, for with one accord, at a preconcerted signal, they rushed impetuously upon the Christians, and murdered every one they could lay hands on. The Christians also made an attempt to resist the assailants, and so the mischief was the more augmented. This desperate affray was prolonged until satiety of bloodshed put an end to it. Then it was discovered that very few of the heathens had been killed, but a great number of Christians, while the number of wounded on each side was almost innumerable. Fear then possessed the pagans on account of what was done, as they considered the emperor's displeasure. For having done what seemed good in their own eyes, and by their bloodshed having quenched their courage, some fled in one direction, some in another, and many, quitting Alexandria, dispersed themselves in various cities. Among these were the Tigramarians Heladius and Ammonius, whose pupil I was in my youth at Constantinople. To Heladius was said to be the priest of Jupiter, and Ammonius of Simmias. 3 Thus this disturbance having been terminated, the governor of Alexandria, and the commander-in-chief of the troops in Egypt, assisted Theophilus in demolishing the heathen temples. These were therefore razed to the ground, and the images of their gods molten into pots and other convenient utensils for the use of the Alexandrian church, for the emperor had instructed Theophilus to distribute them for the relief of the poor. All the images were accordingly broken to pieces, except one statue of the god before mentioned, which Theophilus preserved and set up in a public place, lest, said he, at a future time the heathens should deny that they had ever worshipped such gods. This action gave great umbrage to Ammonius the grammarian in particular, who to my knowledge was accustomed to say that the religion of the Gentiles was grossly abused in that single statue was not also molten, but preserved, in order to render that religion ridiculous. Heladius, however, boasted in the presence of some that he had slain in that desperate onset 9 men with his own hand. Such were the doings at Alexandria at that time. Chapter 17, Of the Hieroglyphics Found in the Temple of Serapis. Warm, the Temple of Serapis was torn down and laid bare. There were found in it, engraven on stones, certain characters which they call hieroglyphics, having the forms of crosses. 1 Both the Christians and pagans, on seeing them, appropriated and applied them to their respective religions, for the Christians, who affirm that the cross is the sign of Christ's saving passion, claim this character as peculiarly theirs, but it symbolizes one thing to Christians and another to heathens. Whilst this point was controverted amongst them, some of the heathen converts to Christianity, who were conversant with these hieroglyphic characters, interpreted the form of a cross and said that it signifies life to come. This the Christians exultingly laid hold of, as decidedly favorable to their religion. But after other hieroglyphics had been deciphered containing a prediction that when the cross should appear, comma, for this was life to come, comma, the temple of Serapis would be destroyed, a very great number of the pagans embraced Christianity, and confessing their sins, were baptized. Such are the reports I have heard respecting the discovery of this symbol in form of a cross. But I cannot imagine that the Egyptian priests foreknew the things concerning Christ, when they engraved the figure of a cross. For if the advent of our Savior into the world was a mystery hid from ages and from generations, to as the apostle declares, and if the devil himself, the prince of wickedness, knew nothing of it, his ministers, the Egyptian priests, are likely to have been still more ignorant of the matter. But Providence doubtless purposed that in the inquiry concerning this character, there should something take place analogous to what happened heretofore at the preaching of Paul. For he, made wise by the divine Spirit, employed a similar method in relation to the Athenians, 3, and brought over many of them to the faith, when on reading the inscription on one of their altars, he accommodated and applied it to his own discourse. Unless indeed any one should say, that the word of God wrought in the Egyptian priests, as it did on Balaam 4 and Caiaphas 5, for these men uttered prophecies of good things in spite of themselves. This will suffice on the subject. Chapter 18, Reformation of Abuses at Rome by the Emperor Theodosius. The Emperor Theodosius, during his short stay in Italy, conferred the greatest benefit on the city of Rome, by grants on the one hand, and abrogations on the other. His largesses were indeed very munificent, and he removed two most infamous abuses which existed in the city. One of them was the following: there were buildings of immense magnitude, erected in ancient Rome in former times, in which bread was made for distribution among the people. One, those who had the charge of these edifices, whom mansipes too were called in the Latin language, in process of time converted them into receptacles for thieves. Now, as the bakehouses in these structures were placed underneath, they built taverns at the side of each, where they kept prostitutes, by which means they entrapped many of those who went thither either for the sake of refreshment, or to gratify their lusts, for by a certain mechanical contrivance they precipitated them from the tavern into the bakehouse below. This was practiced chiefly upon strangers, and such as were in this way kidnapped were compelled to work in the bakehouses, where many of them were immured until old age, not being allowed to go out, and giving the impression to their friends that they were dead. It happened that one of the soldiers of the Emperor Theodosius fell into this snare, who, being shut up in the bakehouse, and hindered from going out, drew a dagger which he wore and killed those who stood in his way. The rest, being terrified, suffered him to escape. When the emperor was made acquainted with the circumstance, he punished the mansipes, and ordered these haunts of lawless and abandoned characters to be pulled down. This was one of the disgraceful nuisances of which the emperor purged the imperial city. The other was of this nature: when a woman was detected in adultery, they punished the delinquent not in the way of correction but rather of aggravation of her crime. For shutting her up in a narrow brothel, they obliged her to prostitute herself in a most disgusting manner, causing little bells to be rung at the time of the unclean deed that those who passed by might not be ignorant of what was doing within. This was doubtless intended to brand the crime with greater ignominy in public opinion. As soon as the emperor was apprised of this indecent usage, he would by no means tolerate it, but having ordered the Sistra 3, for so these places of penal prostitution were denominated, to be pulled down, he appointed other laws for the punishment of adulteresses. For thus did the Emperor Theodosius free the city from two of its most discreditable abuses, and when he had arranged all other affairs to his satisfaction, he left the Emperor Valentinian at Rome, and returned himself with his son Honorius to Constantinople, and entered that city of the 10th of November, in the consulate of Tatian and Symmachus. 5.